You are listening to Radio Aryan.
And welcome to SS Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 9th of October, 2017. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. I'm joined today by my friend and co-host, Subal, otherwise known as Brutus of Troy. Brutus, how are you doing today on this fine autumnal day?
I'm very well, thank you very much. You can find my podcast, Brutus of Troy, on YouTube. No, sorry, it's not Brutus of Troy. It's the Trojan Report.
it's the Aryan Spring of Troy, Subal.
Oh, I got so many different names.
What are you called this week?
I'm going to stick with Brutus now. I'm really going to stick with it, honestly.
That's a good one. Good name to pick, I think. Brutus of Troy. Yeah. And, of course, you can find all our content at RadioAryan.com. Don't forget to check out Alt-Right Andy's YouTube channel, whatever he's calling himself now, and also Morgoth Review. And we also have a Bitcoin wallet, and we rely on your donations to keep the radio station going. And this week we've got loads of news for you from Britain. Britain has had so much going on over the last week. In spite of Amber Rudd trying to lock nationalists up for 15 years for viewing David Duke videos, there is still a thriving nationalist scene in Great Britain. Over the weekend, I was lucky enough to attend the John Tyndall Memorial Meeting, which took place in Preston. There were 70 nationalists there, some really, really good speeches, and lots of things going on that I was just unaware of, that I'll talk about in a minute. And also, there was the Football Lads Alliance March Against Terrorism, which took place in the capital city in London. 70,000 people attended, and they marched in silence for part of it. Then they came across Antifa, anti-racists, who were calling them names, so they called them a few names back. None of this was featured on the BBC. None of it was featured on Sky News. There is an article on the Daily Mail, and the Independent covered it as well, and they were calling them far right and saying that the English Defence League were a part of it, and that this group should be distancing itself from Tommy Robinson. Well, Tommy Robinson is a hero to most of them. He was trying to wake us all up to the threat that the Islamization of our country. He was trying to wake us up to that 10 years ago. So I don't think the Football Lads Alliance are going to be disassociating themselves from him soon. So we've got civic nationalism is on the rise with this Football Lads Association. And we've also got ethno-nationalism, which is doing really well. As I say, I went to this John Tyndall Memorial Meeting. Benny Bullman was the first to speak there from Whitelaw, and he was talking about a subject that we really don't cover that much here at Radio Aryan. He was talking about blood and honour and Rock Against Communism and Ian Stewart. And Benny's been with Blood and Honour since they started, 20 years, I guess. And every year since Ian Stewart's death, they've had a memorial concert for him. And this goes on around about this time of year. There's usually 500 to 1,000 people that attend. It goes on for a whole weekend. And every year, the police do their best to shut down this festival, this gig. There's never any trouble there. There's never been any arrests. The place is left spotless afterwards. And they had a real runaround this year trying to actually find a venue that would allow them to host it. They did finally get to host the gig, and the proprietors of the venue said that they were the most well-behaved audience that they have ever had there, and yet still the police went absolutely wild at them, saying you're never going to be doing anything like this ever again, we want to know everything that you're doing from now on, you know, threatening them basically. And the authorities turned back over 100 people that were trying to get into the country. They turned them back. They wouldn't allow them into the country. And this wasn't done underneath any laws that we have. I mean, you can't just turn people away because you don't like their politics. I mean, we haven't got anything in law that allows us to do this, but our government just seems to be running roughshod over all the principles of freedom that we supposedly have here in Britain. One person was strip searched, dressed up in a paper suit and kept in a cell, and he was a lawyer. He's actually a lawyer in Germany, and he gave them notice, basically, that Britain was breaking the law by doing this. 100 people were turned back, 100 law-abiding people were turned back on the same weekend that we have this black guy that is supposedly not a terrorist, but somehow he managed to drive into a pedestrian precinct and knock 12 people over. And then when he came out of the car, he was laughing. He wasn't saying, oh my God, what have I done? This was a deliberate attack. So the police can't protect us from terrorists. All the terrorists that have ever been locked up from these terrorist attacks that we've had this year, they've all been released without charge. And yet innocent people that just want to come to the country to listen to some rock against communism, basically, and hear positive lyrics about white people that are singing about our history, singing about our past, singing about the great things that we've done, they're not allowed in. And this was a main focal point of this John Tyndall Memorial meeting. Steve Frost from British Movement, he was talking about this as well, and this persecution of everyone involved in nationalism. And at the same time, we've got Jack Renshaw, who's on remand in prison, and they're accusing him of plotting to murder some Jews, basically because they had a mole with him in the pub, and he was talking about how these traitorous politicians all need to be lined up against the wall and shot, something that everybody has said, something that gets said in the pub. You know, every night of the year, you're going to hear that in the pub, and yet just for that, they've got him on remand in prison. So they're trying to completely silence free speech. They're trying to silence all criticism of them, and it's just not working. The lads that were accused of being members of National Action, there were 11 of them that were arrested last week. They've all been released without charge. I don't know how you could actually even press charges that they're members of National Action when there was no membership list. At the same time last week, we also had Alison Chablow. She was supposed to be turning up in court, and she was told that she didn't actually have to turn up in court. It was just a procedural thing, but she thought she would go anyway in case there were some of her supporters had gone there so that she could go and talk to them. And when she got there, the police arrested her again. And then they unarrested her, and then they arrested her again, and they kept her locked up for 48 hours. And this is just for singing funny songs. They are really persecuting the girl. They're really hounding her. There's all these Jews, apparently, that go to the court that start dancing around with glee whenever anything bad happens to her. But she has also got plenty of us there supporting her as well. And I dare say that the courthouse must be sick to death of these Jews by now, because they can see that it's just a vindictive, vexatious case against somebody, against a performer who's just singing funny songs, basically. Nobody else would be able to get people locked up for singing funny songs about them. But this Jewish group that masquerades as a charity, the campaign against anti-Semitism, they've somehow managed to do that. So we've had good news and bad news on the British front from last week, really. And as I say, all this was on the back of Amber Rudd saying that she was going to lock people up for 15 years for viewing far-right propaganda. And when you actually look into it, what she's talking about is streaming it. It's only people that stream it. She seems to think that people are streaming videos rather than downloading them to try and get around some law that the British government have got. This is how out of touch this woman is. She understands nothing at all about the internet. And every time she opens her mouth, she makes a fool of herself. Nobody's going to be locked up for 15 years. People have said to me, well, what about you? Does this affect you? Well, no, it doesn't affect me because I just listen to podcasts. I don't even watch the videos anyway. And then she was saying it's because we want to catch people out who repeatedly watch them. Nobody repeatedly watches a YouTube video. They watch a video and then they move on to the next one. I just cannot work out what goes through this woman's mind. This is after saying that she wanted all the WhatsApp and all these other internet companies to build a back door into encryption. And this is because she says we have to hear what people are saying. But what is encryption? I mean, if you were here right in front of me, right now, Suba, I would be talking to you and it would be a private conversation and the government couldn't hear it. So what is the difference between people communicating online through encryption without the government hearing it? It's just the same as if they were face to face. This attack on our liberties is not to protect us from Islamic terrorism. It's just to silence all criticism of the traitors that we have in power. And I really don't think they are going to be in power for much longer after the performance last week at the Conservative conference with Theresa May being handed a P45, all the letters falling off her backdrop. Then her voice gradually got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse until it was a croak. And then she finally ended up bursting into tears on her husband's shoulder. And this is the woman that is supposedly leading us into Brexit, leading us in this war against terror. And between her and Sadiq Khan, they're going to protect us from what's going on in the country. They can't. It's an absolute joke. And the fact that 70,000 people turned out to protest against terrorism on Saturday gives me great hope that we are eventually going to see them forced out of office and we're going to see be somebody more suitable put in place. And I'm even starting to think that Jeremy Corbyn would be better than Theresa May. At least he might allow us to have a certain amount of free speech. I mean, he does stand up for extremists, basically. I mean, we're not violent extremists, but I guess you could say that we are on the more extreme end of politics, even, you know, when what we're saying is basically central and natural. But yeah, loads and loads of news from Britain in the last week, and I've gone on for ages here now, Subal. So what are your thoughts on those subjects?
Yeah, a lot of stuff there. I don't think Jeremy Corbyn's a good idea. That's the first thing I've got to say in reaction to that. My opinion about the whole Tory conference and my opinion about Theresa May and the whole joke that is the Tory party is basically that they are still just trying to throw the election or throw the party down the drain so they can give it to Labour so that Jeremy Corbyn can open up the gates and flood the country with Syrian refugees from North Africa, just in the same way that Angela Merkel has done. I mean, that's my opinion. That's what they seem to be doing. So no, I don't think Jeremy Corbyn is a good idea at all. And in fact, I was quite angry with the Daily Stormer and with Andrew Anglin when he was telling everybody to vote for him. I think it's a huge mistake. Because the Labour Party is just essentially a Muslim party. That's all it is. We've got that stupid, horrible, obnoxious, what was her name, Naz Shah or whatever, saying that the young white girls of Rotherham should shut their mouths for the sake of diversity. I mean, these people are just no. Anyway, no. My opinion is, yeah, they're trying to throw the election. I was just reading Peter Hitchens writing about it actually in the Daily Mail, and he was saying that basically the Tory party is a Blairite party. They remodeled themselves. I mean, he was talking about Theresa May and how, you know, she was one of the cheerleaders and one of the key people within the party who refashioned the Tory party into essentially what is a Blairite party. And they created David Cameron, who's essentially a Blairite. They got elected. Of course, it was a wobbly election because it was really a failed election because it was
they totally lost their mandate, didn't they? They totally lost their mandate with that election. Before then, that they had a huge majority over Labour, and after that election, they didn't even have enough of a majority to actually say that they'd won the election. They had to go into coalition with Northern Ireland. So yeah, it was a complete failure, yeah. Wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, but even before that, they were in a coalition with the Liberal Democrat Party. That's what the point I was trying to make. So they were in a coalition with the Liberal Democrat Party, so it wasn't really a great victory. And then, you know, Cameron, he didn't think he'd win again. And he, he promised a referendum. He won by a landslide because of that promise. He thought he'd throw the election. or he thought that it would be another coalition, and he managed to get away with not having the referendum. So they made a mistake. They were forced into a referendum. Obviously, they tried to, fiddle the vote, but we won anyway. And now he's, Theresa May's come in and she calls another election. Why? To throw the party down the drain so that Labour can come in and stop Brexit. And now they're just talking and talking and talking about leadership politics. Who's going to be the leader? Blah, 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 blah. And, in my opinion, I've said this many times before in the show, sooner or later, Theresa May's going to go down and they'll play the Boris Johnson card. I think they just want to keep her there for as long as possible so they can play the Boris card as late as possible and hopefully, coast the party into another victory in the next election and then continue to follow the vote. But I was thinking about this today, actually, about the Tory conference. I was thinking about it this week and kind of had an epiphany, and it's kind of an obvious epiphany. But anyway, nonetheless, it does seem to me that American politics is just so much more stable than British politics, because when they elect a president, I mean, he's president for 4 or 5 years, right? Well, 4 years, technically. He's president for 4 years, and it's fixed. You can't get rid of him. The only way you can get rid of him is if you indict him. But in our system of politics, you can undermine the leader at any point. And so really all these politicians are just standing on a quagmire. They don't have their feet on the ground. The party beneath them is constantly rebelling against them, and all that the press talks about in this country, it's just constantly blabbing on about challenges to the leadership. That's all it is. It's like a giant gossip column. It's really awful. And I mean, at least, obviously, you got fake news in America with CNN and that, but at least they do kind of talk about what the government is doing, because they're forced to, because the Republican Party can't turn against Donald Trump and kick him out midterm. They have to wait till 2020. So yeah, it's just, I'm not a fan of democracy, but there are different varieties of democracy. I would say that ours is one of the worst because of the instability of the leadership position, and the Republican model that they have in America is superior. And maybe Switzerland is the best because they actually have referendums, but I don't know, I'm not too sure about that. But yeah, over to you, Sven.
Yeah, they have a representative democracy over in Switzerland, don't they? There are much more chances to vote in referendums and things like that. I think you're right about Boris Johnson. They're really pushing him in the news at the moment that he's going to be replacing Theresa May, and she's just hanging on there for grim death, basically. She's as bad as Gordon Brown. She knows that nobody wants her. I mean, that's what the outcome of that election was that people do not have faith in you. No, you are not strong and stable leadership. You are weak and feeble, and nobody likes you. Nobody wants you. Get down from there. Hand it over to Jacob Rees-Mogg. He will do a good job of it. He's the only one that I can see that would be capable of doing anything. I mean, if you the actual speech that she gave last week, it was dreadful. None of it was what we want to hear. She was talking about building more houses for the immigrants. She's talking about putting some more money in the NHS rather than stopping the immigrants from using it for free. The speech didn't say anything about putting a stop to immigration. And at the end of it, this was the worst speech that's ever been had at any conference anywhere, because she just lost her voice and tried to continue when nobody could actually hear what she was saying. At the end of it, all these lying, backstabbing politicians all stood up and said what a wonderful speech it was, how amazing it was. Listen to her dream of the ideal Britain. And there was nothing in it that was inspiring, nothing in it that was quintessentially British or anything about a British ideal or a British dream. And yet Boris Johnson and Amber Rudd and all the rest of them were saying what a wonderful speech it was, lying through their teeth. And you know that they all want that position. They all want that job. They all want to be prime minister. and yet they will suck up to her and pretend that they're all loyal to her, to the press, knowing that everybody is just watching thinking, what, did you see the same speech that we did? That was absolutely dreadful. It was terrible. I mean, the backdrop completely fell apart. One letter after another fell off the back of the backdrop. They can't even organise a conference, let alone organise removing us from the EU. And they're basically spitting in the face of everyone that voted for Brexit. That was a referendum on immigration. That was the whole country saying, no, we don't want any more immigration. And she's totally ignored that. She's made the byword of the Conservative Party a global Britain. Nobody said they wanted a global Britain. What we said was we wanted Great Britain. We wanted Britain separate from the European Union. We want control of our borders. We want to get rid of the people that are here. This was another thing from the John Tyndall Memorial Meeting. They were saying we should reintroduce the catchphrase of stop immigration, start repatriation, which is what the National Front were using in the 70s, I believe. Richard Edmunds was there. He gave a wonderful speech, and he's been involved in nationalism now for 45 years. 45 years he's been working to try and get this country back to how it should be and get rid of the invaders, inspired by Enoch Powell. There was a lot of talk about Enoch Powell as well. With this podcast, you know, we are continuing on this fight. Basically, we're standing on the shoulders of giants. We're lucky that we've still got giants like Richard Edmunds around. As I say, he gave a really good speech. Peter Rushton gave an excellent speech there as well. So we've still got people out there that we've got a lot of people out there that want to fight against this and that want to get our country back. But we just need to unite them, really. I mean, we've got this football alliance, 70,000 people that turned up, but they're not ethno-nationalists, and we don't really have a political wing of ethno-nationalism anymore. We don't even have a counter-jihad party because Anne-Marie Waters failed to win the leadership. One of the most unsurprising people, actually, or most surprising people, came out in support of Anne-Marie Waters last week. Morrissey from the Smiths said that he was very disappointed to see that Anne-Marie Waters didn't win. I wasn't expecting that. And of course, the mainstream press have all really attacked him for this. But the fact that he's brave enough to stand up and say that this is wrong is really good. And Katie Hopkins as well. She's been tweeting about this clamping down on the far right. She tweeted about Scottish Dawn being banned, saying, why is this group being banned? She said about this new law about giving people watching far right videos 15 years in prison. This is wrong. So we are starting to see some stirrings in the mainstream celebrities in support of us. We just need to see more of them speaking out. Of course, that was a great shame with Anne-Marie not getting in, is because she does get featured on the television a lot. So we would have seen her on the TV a lot more, and that would have inspired people to start talking about these things and demanding that their local politicians stop the immigration and start the repatriation. I'm just looking here on my list to see what some of the other subjects that we've that we've got for today.
I just wanted, in regard to the John Tyndall meeting and the state of British white nationalism. Yeah, I just feel like I don't know. I do feel like we're slightly disorganized and we're still kind of stuck in white nationalism 1.0. in this country, unfortunately, and we're not making full use of the internet. And I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just, you know, I'm as much to blame as anybody. But I'm just putting this out there. I wish we had a website like the Daily Stormer, which focused only on British subjects, or like altright.com, which focused only on British subjects. I wish we had a website like that. I actually like the website, the layout of Return of Kings, actually, which is the Manosphere website. I know people don't like Roosh because he's a Muslim, but whatever. I like the layout of the website because they have so many different guest writers who have their own blogs, you see. And so these people, they have their own blogs, and then they get to write an article, and they get it posted on Return of Kings. And then that in turn, you know, they have a link back to their own blog, so they get to promote their own blog. You see, it's like a reciprocal relationship, like you scratch my back, I scratch yours. It works very well. I wish we had something like that for England. And all these people, I mean, all these people that you're mentioning, Sven, I mean, I'm sorry to say, I've only been in the movement for 2 years. I know some of their names and I recognize them, but I got no idea what these people say, because they're not on YouTube. They don't have blogs, or if they do have blogs, I've never heard of. They don't seem to be associated with the alt-right. They don't have podcasts. They never get articles posted on altright.com or anything like that. They never get interviewed by any of the characters in the alt-right. And I'm kind of like, you know, who are these people? Why are we stuck 10 years behind? I don't want to insult anybody. Let me make it very clear. I've absolute massive respect for these people. They've been keeping the fire alive for many, many years, and they've done the homework and the knowledge is there. I just wish, you know, it's kind of like all the knowledge is there, but where's the presentation? Do you know what I mean? Me and you, Sven, we were talking about this before. You know, why can't you get some of these old guys, you know, that have been in the National Front for 40 years? Why can't they do a podcast? They must know British politics inside and out. They know all the characters, all the stories for the last 40 years. I would love to hear a weekly podcast of these people speaking. I'd love to get to know these people. But it seems to me, for whatever reason, they're not making, you know, use of the internet. And I think that's a great shame.
Yeah, they could probably make better use of their time. I mean, this is, you know, you're touching on a point there that I have noticed. I mean, there will be a lot of talk about unity, and we need to get all the representatives of these different parties together and all working together. And I've heard quite a few different ones talking about doing radio and doing podcasts. And I said, well, look, we've got Radio Arian. Come and do your podcast here. But they all go off and do their little things separately, and nobody really hears about it. I mean, I'd love to have more podcasts here. We've had Richard Edmonds on a couple of times. But again, his time is tied up with doing so many other things. I mean, he was over in Germany for the Rudolf Hess March, 70 years or however many years it was. So obviously 70 years since the war, but however many years since Rudolf Hess died, they had a big march over in Germany. Of course, he speaks Germany and English, and he goes over to all the revisionists when they are being charged. He's over there at the court. And the same with Peter Rushton. So they are involved in doing a lot of things over in Europe. I suspect most of our listeners are probably aware of these people. You can find them at the London Forum, your channel, YouTube channel. You'll find speeches by a lot of them. I mean, they could make better use of their time, I guess, if they would get more involved with the internet, because that's how you reach people nowadays. I mean, you can go out on a march, and you know, you'll be lucky if you meet two or three people that are interested in joining the organisation. And most of the people that will see you on the march, you know, they won't have heard of this before. But if you're putting stuff out online, then, you know, you could have thousands of people that come across your podcast that are looking to find something to do with nationalism, and they'll find your podcast, and then your message will reach them. So it's a much more effective way of using your time. And they did have Mark Cullett speaking there. He was excellent. I do think Mark is a really inspirational speaker. And he's the sort of person that we need to be fronting some kind of political movement. We need somebody young who's inspirational. And he's been involved for a long time. I mean, he's worked with John Tyndall. He was part of the Young BNP. He's been featured on Channel 4 doing programs with I forget his name, that daft comedian, Russell Brand. He's been on, he's done documentaries with him. He does stuff with David Duke, lots of stuff. So, I mean, he puts his name out there and people listen to him. I'd like to see him leading some kind of political party. It's a real shame that he's not leading the BNP. And the audience there, it was mainly sort of older people. So that was really a shame, because really we want to get older people and younger people together in this movement. So as you say, so people can learn from these people that have been involved for 45 years, that know politics of it in inside and out. I mean, Richard's great when he speaks about the politicians, and he's seen all of this happen. You know, he remembers when the word mugging wasn't a part of the English language, when these areas were still white, and they were there in the 70s with the National Front doing their marches. And that was then. It was all about marches and demonstrations, because that was how you reach the people. But nowadays, to have an effective reach, it needs to be an online outreach. This is what frightens the government. This is why the government are saying 15 years for streaming far-right videos, is because the internet is how you reach people now. They're not fussed about demonstrations. They're not fussed about people going out there and having a march. They've got that one sewed up. They can just shove a load of Antifa out there and shut the march down and say it's got violent. But they can't do that online. They can't just shut down what we're putting out online, because the free speech issue comes into it, and the wherever the content is hosted comes into it, and the laws that are there, and also because it happens so quickly. I mean, we produce a new podcast every week, so you know it comes out. People watch it straight away. We usually get 2,000-3,000 views in the first week, and then over the month, maybe you get another 500. So it all gets seen straight away. And if the government were to say, well, we don't like that, we want to remove that, everybody would have heard it already, and far more people than you're actually going to get to talk to if you go out on the street. I know when National Action were going, when they would go out on the street, they were constantly trying to work out better ways of trying to reach people and the target audience, and making the best use of your time. You know, if you talk to 100 people on the street, you're probably only going to meet one or two of them that are going to be susceptible to joining the actual group. So they're trying to identify how they could spot the people that are most likely to be interested in nationalism before actually going over to them and starting to talk. It's all about being effective use of your time. So I guess what we really need is more conversation between the younger people and the older people. But then, of course, you get this, you know, you get the wary of the older generation, these boomers, and they don't really listen to us. Because I remember when NA first started, they were mocked a little bit. They were ridiculed a bit by the older people in the movement. And they both didn't work together. And we saw the same happen in Charlottesville. It was the young people in the movement that wanted to set up Charlottesville and that went ahead with it. And the older people in the movement distanced themselves from it and said, well, we don't like this guy because he supports homosexuality. We don't like this guy because he's got an Asian wife. We don't like this guy because he's got black friends or he's part Jewish. So they distanced themselves from it, which was a great shame, because that experience that is there with white nationalism 1.0, that experience could have prevented that huge cock-up that was Charlottesville, because they would have said, you do know that the police are going to force you to walk through the Antifa. Be prepared for when that happens. Be prepared to have a second rendezvous point for if they shut it all down. Make sure you've got copies, hard copies of all the interactions that you've had with the police and the state. You know, all sorts of information and advice, I think, would have come from the more experienced people in the movement. And it didn't, because people just, you know, sort of distanced themselves from it, which was a shame. Okay, you can have your principles and say, we don't support homosexuality, we don't support race mixing, but at the same time, all the people that were going to there to Charlottesville are our target audience. Whether or not a few of the speakers aren't as strongly idealistic as we are, shouldn't matter. It was all the people that were going there that mattered, and 99% of the people that went there were fully on board with everything that we are. Just the fact that there were some softer speakers really shouldn't have mattered. You know, it's all about talking to each other and realizing, you know, that we are all white people. It doesn't matter what age we are, and it doesn't matter how national socialist we are or how soft we are on these political subjects or what. We're all white people, and we're all trying to do what we can for the white race, and we should be networking and working with one another and helping one another to do what we can do. I mean, for instance, at this John Tyndall Memorial Meeting, I offered to help Mark Cullett out with his audio for the audio book. And people that know how to do video work should be offering to help out others with their video work. I mean, I've offered to put Richard Edmonds on Radio Arian more. He's already done a couple of Arian Insights interviews, and he wanted to do more, but his time is always taken up with doing so much else. So I guess we need to talk more between each other and offer to help each other out more, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, not that I want to really, really moan, but I will say that, you know, sometimes, well, a lot of the time I post my articles or I post my podcasts on Twitter, and then I'll send a message to a alt-right or white nationalist Twitter account, someone who's got more subscribers than me, like 2,000 subscribers or 3,000 subscribers. And I'll send a tweet and I'll say something like, you know, can you retweet my article? You know, just to get me a few more views. You know, I'm a white nationalist too. Can you just, you know, help me out? And they never do it. Never, ever. Maybe once they do it. And it's a real shame. And it's a big problem. Because if you study the Jews and you understand how they work, I mean, you just read Kevin MacDonald and his Culture of Critique. If you see the way that they work as a tribe. They're very, very, very good at networking, and they have an intense kind of in-group bond, and that is how they manage to push forward revolutions, because they network and they help each other out because they're Jewish. And it's like, okay, you're Jewish, you're my brother, I don't really, maybe don't fully agree with what you're doing, but anyway, you're a Jew, so I'm going to help you out. Unfortunately, white nationalists do not do the same. And I understand why it happens. I really do, psychologically. I think it's because, you know, if you look at it in terms of group dynamics, we as white men that come to this movement, we are the outsiders. We are essentially, we're all lone wolves, because we're people that have rejected the mainstream. We've rejected everything that mainstream white people are following. And stepped outside of us, because so we're all loners, and it's kind of difficult for a bunch of loners to all of a sudden figure out how to work together as a group. On the other hand, the Jews, in comparison, the revolutionaries within the Jews, they're not loners. They're the most intense in-group people in the group. Like the loners within the Jews, they're the ones that end up assimilating into Western culture. So it's a totally different dynamic. It's really interesting, actually, when you think about it. But yeah, we do need to work together, and the boomers need to listen to the millennials need to listen to the boomers. I made an article about this called it was called Odysseus Telemachus, and the idea was that Homer, he wrote a book called The Odyssey, and in that book it describes Odysseus's travel back to his homeland, and he gets stuck on the island of Calypso. And while this is going on, his son Telemachus, you know, he's stuck at home, and he has all these foreign men inside his house, and they're trying to marry his mother Penelope, and they're eating all of his food and stealing all of his wealth, and he's not strong enough by himself to throw them out. And what happens is, in the end, Odysseus has to come back, and it's a team effort. It's Odysseus and Telemachus. They team up together and they kick out these suitors, and they, you know, they regain the homeland, so to speak. So the analogy is that Telemachus, he's like the millennial generation, right? We've all grown up with these foreigners in our country. They're trying to get our women. They're stealing all our wealth. And Odysseus, you know, that's the baby boomer generation. They went off to Troy fighting foreign wars. They got stuck on the island of Calypso. Calypso's like, you know, luxury, right? All the wealth that the baby boomers have, and they still do have. And they're distracted by this. You know, Odysseus was distracted by Calypso. She was very beautiful. He's having sex with her every night. You know, all day long he'd cry, and then missing his homeland. And then in the evening he'd go into the cave and have sex with this nymph. But eventually, father and son, they came together and they defeated the enemy. And this is what the boomers and the millennials, they really need to do this. Yeah, we need to win the fight. And this is kind of what happened in America with the Trump revolution, because a lot of boomers like Trump and a lot of young people like Trump. But as you say, still within white nationalism, there does still appear to be this division, unfortunately.
Well, I think we there aren't enough of us to be that picky about who we support and who we fight alongside. And I can understand people being principled. And I know that when Hitler was writing in Mein Kampf, he said about not having these alliances with civic nationalists and these other groups, and we need to stand out on our own. But I think the organization by that time was big enough so that they could. But when you've got organizations with less than 100 people, you don't really want to set yourself up in opposition to everyone else, because they have a slightly, they're not quite as principled as you are. You know, we need to be fighting together in this, I think, because, you go along a path, basically, of discovering the truth. And not everybody discovers it all at one instance. You know, it can take a matter of years before you work out the Jewish role behind everything. And up until that point, you may just see it as being Muslims and the Islamification of Britain. And the greatest threat, I think, we face is fighting among ourselves. You know, is people like Tommy Robinson calling us Nazis and racists, and the civic nationalists saying no genuine racists allowed. So they basically only want fake racists on their forums, that sort of thing. And then conversely, on our side, us saying, well, we don't want anything to do with people that aren't hard enough against homosexuals. We don't want anything to do with people that aren't hard enough, strict enough on race mixing. All that sort of thing, you know, because we need to have a united group that's standing against all of this. And that's what the alt-right was at first. I mean, it was a descriptive term that included the far right and it included the less far right. It included what was the alt-right at the moment. And that was the good thing about it. You know, it had broken down these barriers. The media was having to call it the alt-right, which doesn't have the same negative connotations that far-right does in people's minds. And it also brought us into contact with people that were sort of halfway there already. This is a thing. Our target audience, the people we are most likely to reach, are the people that follow Tommy Robinson and that follow UKIP, because they've already got the stirrings of some form of patriotism and nationalism within them to go searching after those groups. And they are our target audience. And the only way we're going to reach our target audience is by having interactions with them, and not negative ones. I mean, if we are attacking the people that they think are really good, like Tommy Robinson or like UKIP, then they're going to instantly be against us. Rather than thinking, well, let's hear what he has to say, they're going to think, well, they're our enemies. We don't want to listen to what they have to say. So, you know, I think we need to be working together more with these other groups and not being so negative against them. I personally, we can stand for our principles and be idealistic, but as far as this punching right and attacking people that are, you know, almost on the same side as us, I don't see that is beneficial. And there's another way of looking at it, that the strong man will survive. The one that has the best ideology will win out in the end. So we don't necessarily have to attack these other people, because eventually people will see that we are the ones that are on the right path, because we are based as firmly as possible that we can get on the truth. So our ideology and our way of doing things is going to be superior, and it will prove to be superior. And when it does, people will come to us anyway. So the strongest man will win. The best ideology will win in the end, and the people will come and join it. We don't need to set ourselves up in opposition to these other groups. We just need to set a good example. There's something that I've always been really big on is trying to set a good example to people. Rather than, being stood on feet of clay and people saying, oh, yeah, but you've got an Asian wife, or yeah, but you're friendly with homosexuals. You know, so we can say, well, we don't have any of that. We won't have any of that at Radio Arium. We try to set a good example and, do what we actually say. Don't just listen. You know, we don't just talk about this. We live this in our real lives. It's not, It's not a hobby. We wouldn't suggest to people that they do anything that we wouldn't do ourselves. I don't know if you want to carry on with some more on this or look at some of these other subjects that we were going to talk about, Brutus.
Yeah, I just want to talk about Mike Veal. And this is a story which appeared in the Daily Mail today. And who is Mike Veal? Mike Veal, we mentioned this guy, I don't know, 6 months ago, maybe a few months ago. Mike Veal is a police officer, and he's the one that's been investigating Edward Heath. Edward Heath, for people who are young like me, was the Tory Prime Minister from 1970 to 1974. And he's been investigating Edward Heath for accusations of child molestation, paedophilia, basically, buggering young boys, basically. The operation was called Operation Conifer. It's been going on for about 2 years now. It's kicked up a lot of fuss. And this guy, he's basically just been going at it. And he's been saying, I mean, he's done a couple of news stories in the Daily Mail have been about this guy. And he's been saying the whole of the establishment came out and threatened him. And told him that if he keeps going on with this, then he's going to be forced to resign, he's going to be shut down, etc., etc. And anyway, at the end of it, the result of Operation Conifer, the article didn't really explain whatever it was. The end result of the operation was released in the last week, and now guess what? He's back in his day job. It actually wasn't clear, but he hasn't been forced to resign. But it's over. You know, he's back at the in the position that he was before. And it's just reading the article, it's just he seems to be absolutely convinced that Edward Heath was buggering young boys, and he's very upset because what he has, the evidence that he has basically, is he has these young boys that Edward Heath was buggering. They've grown up, they're adults now, and they're testifying, and they've come to the police to testify. And he was actually making the comparison between, you know, women who get raped and then they come and testify and the police don't believe them. And it's like, well, why won't the police believe they're men now? Why won't they believe them? These men, they've grown up, and they're like, yeah, I was raped when I was 12 by this sodomite politician. And he's basically saying he can't talk about it because of legal reasons, but he's basically saying, yeah, there's a massive paedophile ring in Westminster, and we've all known about this for a long time. And it's just funny that I discovered the story this morning, because flipping last night, for whatever reason, I was strolling around the internet, and I came across Pizzagate again. There was a link on somebody's blog, and I just followed it, and there was a really good article. A really good website. I think, what was it called? It's called dcpizzagate.com. And I started reading that, going through that just last night. I woke up this morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. The first thing I decided to do was watch a documentary called Boys for Sale about Houston and these young boys that are just getting raped by men in Houston. Some of them end up getting beaten up, abused, chopped into pieces, etc., etc. And I was like, you know, I started watching that at 6 o'clock this morning. It's a great way to start your day. But, I don't know, Sven. I mean, it's just, I remember reading about this whole Pizzagate stuff flipping 6 months ago. I made a video about it, about Donald Trump complaining about why is Donald Trump not doing more about it. And I started, you know, digging up all this stuff. It's just so horrific. It's just so, so bad and so nasty. And I don't know. Unfortunately, it's not something that we seem to talk about much. And one of the issues, I think, is that I haven't really seemed to be able to find a leader of this movement. It's something which, I mean, when the Pizzagate thing exploded, you had David Seaman talking about it. He was the big YouTube star blabbing on about Pizzagate. He turned out to be a Jew, and he's kind of just fizzled out. You had Tara McCarthy. She was talking about the Podesta files, and about, what was that other one that came out just before Pizzagate? It was the it was the one with that Jewish artist when she was throwing blood all over the place. The name slipped my mind. But anyway, she was talking about that. That's how she made her debut. She's actually a new person on YouTube. It was Black Pigeon Speaks who introduced her, gave her the audience. She started promoting Pizzagate. Now she's not talking about it anymore. And there was this whole massive Pizzagate community. It was on Reddit. They got kicked off Reddit. They moved to Voet. And a couple of times in the past, I've tried to figure out who is, you know, leading the investigation and getting into it. And I've tried to follow it. I've never actually found a leader, unfortunately. The Daily Stormer was following this story, and they were posting David Seaman's videos. But then it turned out David Seaman was a Jew, and so they dropped it. But anyway, it's one of these points which really, really niggles me. And I know there are a lot of honest people following this. I haven't found a leader to follow, unfortunately. I'm a little bit in the dark on this issue. But it's one of those things. It's kind of like, it's a good test of someone's morale and someone's character. For example, Alex Jones, he said he would talk about Pizzagate. He didn't talk about it. Milo Yiannopoulos, he was going to talk about Pizzagate, do a big thing, and then at the last minute, he shut up about it. Stephen Molyneux never talked about it. That scumbag, Paul Joseph Watson, he's got the balls. He did a video. It's on YouTube right now. It says, "Pedophiles rule the world." And at the beginning of the video, he says, "Oh, we've proved that Pizzagate was a hoax." And then he starts blabbing on about, God knows what. I didn't watch the video. It's probably out of the Pope, you know, something like that. You know, it's a test of someone's character. You know, whether they have talked about this issue or not. And I think it's one of those dynamite. I'd say there are three great taboos that will get you murdered or put in jail. And that's what, number one is to talk about race realism. Number two is to talk about the JQ. And number three is to talk about these child sex allegations. And it's really, unlike the other thing, it's not something which is politically incorrect. Everybody hates these people. And it really touches a nerve in the public.
But Ted Heath, the thing is, they're talking about it now, but why was nothing done about it when he was alive? Why was he not brought in for questioning when he was alive? It's the same with Jimmy Savile. They just allow these things to go on. And there was a British guy that was exposing all this, Bill Maloney. He did a documentary called Sun, Sea and Satan. And he was brought up in children's homes himself and knew all about these paedophile rings that went on in the 70s and the 80s with these politicians that would go to the children's homes. They would pick them up. They would take them off on yachts, abuse them, murder them, all of this sort of thing. And, he was trying to expose it, but I'm not sure what he's done since then. The Sun, Sea, and Satan, I think that came out in 2008. And I haven't really heard much from him recently, but he was a British guy that was exposing all this. And he had the ear of some fairly important celebrities, I seem to remember. But he was a leftist as well. I mean, that's really something that should cross both the left and the right, is being anti the abuse of children by these politicians. And it's not just the Labour Party, it's the Conservative Party.
Yeah, but the Labour Party supports him. The Labour Party supported that PIE, paedophile information exchange, back in the 70s or the 80s, whatever it was. It's on that website, Zionist Factory or whatever. The Labour Party is full of pedos. Sorry. I mean, it's...
Well, yeah, I was saying it's Labour and it's Conservative. It's both of them.
Yeah, it is.
It's both political parties, yeah. And it's something that, that everybody is against. Like you were saying, it's something that people on the left should be as much against as people on the right. I mean, when it's in the newspapers about this abuse, the whole country is against it. You know, the whole country is against Jimmy Savile. But why is nothing done about it then? And until after they've actually died. It's like we're powerless to act against these things. And we talk a lot about the abuse of white children by the Muslims, but there is also this politicians' abuse. And that, again, that is something that the National Front used to expose, was the pedophile rings. of these politicians and the upper classes that are all involved in it as well. And they use it as blackmail. This is why the intelligence services don't go after them, the police don't go after them, is because they know about this. The intelligence services know about it. That's how they blackmail these politicians. That's how the bankers blackmail the politicians. I mean, they can't blackmail them for buggery anymore because that's completely legal. So the only thing that's left for them to get a hold over them is through this pedophilia. And don't forget, you've also got closet buggery going on in the private schools, where they do that as some kind of hazing process with the kids when they come in there, with the older boys. There's a lot of homosexuality and pederasty that goes on in these upper classes. It's pretty sick. It is something that needs exposing. Ted Heath was the one that brought us into the European Union as well. I don't know if that's probably linked in with it too. You know, you're blackmailing him to give away our sovereignty.
Yeah. So I don't know. The whole thing's really upset. I'm really pissed off. Yeah, it's dynamite. I mean, me and you used to. This was actually one of my great hopes for Trump, because you got this Pizzagate scandal just sitting there. And we used to talk about this back in February and January, and my hope was that the thing would just explode, because as we've seen before, the blood libel, the issue of the Jews stealing children for Passover and torturing them for their blood, this is what has caused the Jews to be kicked out of several countries in medieval Europe. And it's something which just tends to get the Goyim very, very angry when you touch their children. If I could just segue into another point while we're talking about it. There was another story in the mail today about the Tavistock Center for Gender Identity Clinic. And they got some young 15-year-old Zoe Middleton is the name of the girl. Sorry, it was a boy, now it's a girl, Zoe Middleton. He, she, or it, or whatever it is now 12 years old, and mummy and daddy are proudly saying that they're going to give it hormone replacement drugs to suppress puberty so that it can become a girl. The Mail did an article about this earlier on in the year, and 800 kids now. 800. It is just one center, actually, in London that is pushing this thing. One center in the whole country that's pushing this thing. 800 kids on hormone replacement therapy, suppressing puberty. Some of them as young. Well, this young one here is 12. I think he's probably the youngest. And in the article, it's very interesting. It says the first one to ever do this hormone suppression therapy, they call it. Therapy, it sounds very innocuous, doesn't it? Very harmless. It's just therapy, Goyim. The first one to do this is a 15-year-old. His name is Leo Etherington, and he committed suicide. The very first one. But, I guess, you have to break a few eggs if you're going to make an omelette.
Well, it's recently been in the news that a lot of them have been requesting that they have reversals of their sex changes, and trying to reverse it, I mean, just makes even more of a mess than what's there in the first place. I mean, they're basically walking around with a gaping wound for the rest of their lives, because they've been failed by our doctors, because our doctors are ignoring the facts, and instead they're listening to liberals twisting their arms, really, and emotional blackmail, instead of thinking about it logically. I've never really understood this disconnect that they have, where they can believe that the body's gender can be actually different to the body, because that's them admitting that the spirit is somehow separate, the soul is somehow separate to the body. And that brings in these ideas that, you know, that there's another world out there. There's a spirit world out there that they're basically admitting to. And yet at the same time, they try to be atheists and evolutionists. So there's a disconnect between these two ways of thinking. So it's really just driven by ideology. It's driven by hatred of all that is natural and all that is good, and a desire to turn creation on its head and hurt creation. It's the same as it's this desire to race mix and mongrelize people. It's a hatred of divinity and a hatred of all that's good and natural. And we know where it comes from, and it goes right back to the rejection of Christ and the rejection of Logos. It's this Jewish idea of turning things on their head and reversing the natural order of things. And it's just the latest way of them doing that is to push this gender transformation and the mutilation of people and lying to them and convincing them that if they just chop their bits off, then they can be another gender. I mean, that's a bit of a distressing news story to end the podcast on. So I'll try and bring
it's
up something
it's a brave
here.
New world, Sven. It really yeah. is. And I do think that,
well, just like the book,
it was Audius Huxley, wasn't it? Brave New World.
Yeah.
He really had the right idea. Get the kids, get the children sexualized, and that's it. You know, you've destroyed society.
You're controlling it. Yeah.
You've got them.
Well, I've got a bit of a good news story to end the podcast with. Richard Spencer went back to Charlottesville on Saturday night with a load of his friends, and they had a torchlit march and a few speeches, and there was no trouble. Basically showing that when it's not announced anywhere, the Antifa don't turn up, and there is no trouble. Just to prove a point. So good luck to him for that. And hopefully we'll see more flash demonstrations turning up in America over the next few months, especially those marches, because they do look good. It would be good to have one of these over here in Britain. I can remember having torchlit marches when I was a kid for bonfire night. We used to have them, and there was never any connotations of it being the Ku Klux Klan, but it was just great to all be walking out with all the people that you knew from your area, and being out at night with torchlit marches. There's something about it that brings us all together, which I think is why, you know, why the National Socialists did it, why nationalists like to do that. So maybe we'll see some torchlit marches in Britain as well. I'd definitely like to. Anyway, that brings us to
maybe
the end.
Maybe we should follow the example of bonfire night and throw all terrorists on the bonfire.
Yeah, well, this is just it. Look at our traditions. You know, we used to throw the terrorist on the bonfire. If you say that today, they'd try and lock you up for hate speech. Let's chuck the Muslims on the bonfire and get rid of them that way. There's one way out, isn't it? Anyway, thanks for thank you very much for coming on, Brutus. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week with another SS Britannia for you on Monday. So until then, we do hope you have a great week ahead of you.
To the anti-white system on RadioArian.com.